today on Family Talk.
Welcome, everyone, to the Wednesday edition of Family Talk, which is a listener-supported ministry of the James Dobson Family Institute. I'm your host, Dr. James Dobson. You know, October has been designated as Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Since 1981, that was designated by the National Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Let me give you some statistics that are alarming. 10 million men and women are physically abused by a partner each year. That's 1 in 3 women and 1 in 4 men per year are victims of violence by a spouse or a significant other. Domestic violence accounts for 15% of all violent crime in the United States. 1 in 15 children are exposed to violence in the home, with many witnessing the abuse firsthand. There are many other horrifying statistics related to domestic violence, including severe mental and economic effects, stalking, rape, and even homicide. The church must step into these hurting families and provide safety and healing for those who are being abused. And in a moment, we're going to hear my co-host, Dr. Tim Clinton, discuss this difficult topic with licensed psychotherapist Dr. Barry Lord. Dr. Lord's counseling experience goes back 30 years, and he is now the retired dean of Behavioral Sciences Department at Southern California Seminary. During his work in private practice, he helped develop an educational program for clinicians to better support victims of domestic violence in their families. This is a tough topic that we're going to talk about today, and it impacts hundreds of thousands of people across the country. We all must recognize the significance of this particular problem in our culture. Here's how Dr. Tim Clinton came alongside Dr. Barry Lord on this edition of Family Talk.
Barry, as we get started, pretty touchy, difficult subject in modern-day society, this whole issue of domestic violence. We're going to talk also a little bit about toxic anger and more. God led you down a road. It's amazing. I regard you as one of the experts in Christianity in this area. Barry, tell us how you got involved, how this all started.
It began in my studies and working with dangerous clients. I worked in prisons. I worked with men on probation and parole. I ran visitation programs in California at Donovan State Prison. I've been to San Quentin, worked with inmates on death row. I got into this and beginning to understand. And you see, the way I figure it is God did not send me into the prison to help anybody. He sent me in there to be broken. And I'll tell you why. When God comes back and his foot touches the Mount of Olives, it's going to split. When he's going to come walking on this earth, and I think he's going to be looking for his treasure. And he may step over a few churches, because guess where we do with our treasure? We lock it away. And a lot of these men, as I'm working in the prisons, I'm broken by the fact that God's treasure is in here also. And that these men, through circumstances, I don't hug a thug. I have cops tell me, well, Barry, you're out there hugging thugs. And I said, no, I don't hug a thug. That isn't going on. But what it is I see real people. I see people caught up in sin. I see people that come by their circumstances honestly. I used to bring lay people into the prison to work with prisoners. And there at Donovan, it was a new program. And I was recruiting from different churches. And this Episcopalian pastor, his name is Fred. And Fred called me up because I get an application from the prisoner. And by the way, the prisoner we're looking for is the one who said mom and dad had said, don't write home. And the wife says, you're getting a divorce. You see, that's the guy most likely to recidivate, go back to crime when he gets out. That is the one who's hopeless and helpless and depressed. There are very few counseling programs for men. I got a pamphlet a while back, and it had about 211 different programs for various things that women were dealing with in the world, and counseling programs and help programs. There wasn't one for men. Do you know what we have for mental health for men in this country? Prison and jail and probation. That's it. Guys are sometimes trapped in some of these worlds where they're raised, they're built up. All they've seen is drugs and degradation and that sort of thing. Well, Fred was a pastor, and I recruited him out of his church to go up to the prison and to meet one-on-one with an inmate. And so he saw the inmate's application, and he gave me his, and I put them together, and I put him with the particular inmate, and I pray over them each time I did it. God, please help this to be right. And Fred calls me up, and he says, Barry, are you nuts? And I went, well, I've been accused of that a few times, but what do you have in mind? And he says, I see the application of my inmate, and I see I've looked at my world. He says, I've never done anything like this in my life. I've never been to jail. I've never committed a crime. Why did you hook this guy up with me? And I said, Fred, would you do me a favor? Would you just trust me? See, there's leadership. A guy will trust me. He'll let me define his reality. And so he said, okay, well, I'll trust you this time. So he goes in, and at the end of the session, I bring a group of these men out, and we go stand on the side of the mountain. We look back at the prison, and if you can imagine, there's no moon. It's pitch blackout. And all of a sudden, there's this light, this prison light's holding back the darkness. And I looked at the guys, and I said, you are the light holding back the darkness because you have Jesus with you. And I look over at Fred, and the tears are just flowing down his cheeks. And I said, Fred, I think you have something to say to the guys. And he said, yeah. He said, there, but for the grace of God, go I. He was broken. Fred went to the prison, not to help, as it turned out, but to be broken enough, emptied his cup so that God could fill it and fill his cup with himself and anoint him to do great things.
Barry, I appreciate your heart, and I know your love and deep commitment to helping individuals on both sides of the aisle through this issue. Let's step back and take a look at domestic violence, first of all. Barry, you've seen more than your share of it. I know you've worked with a lot of cases. You used to work out of San Diego County. I know you now live in Kentucky because you're grandpa.
Yeah.
And you like being with your grandkids, but you're still actively engaged in this and help lead our perspective on what we need to understand and know about domestic violence. Let's start with the level of prevalence in modern-day society and even in the church. What are we looking at?
Most domestic violence incidences are never reported. 1 in 4 women are going to experience domestic violence during her lifetime. The same number, 1 in 4, of gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, I work with them too, individuals also experience domestic violence. So it's not just with women. It can be anybody. Women ages 20 to 24 are at the greatest risk of becoming a victim of domestic violence. And domestic violence is the leading cause of injury to women, more than car accidents, muggings, and rapes by strangers combined.
Hey, let me tell you a story. I was counseling, and I'll never forget this lady coming into my office, and she had reported an incident, and she was in front of me the day after, and it was horrible. I asked her what happened, and she literally, Barry, grabbed her throat and started choking herself. Right in front of me. I'm not talking about choking herself. I'm talking about choking herself. She could hardly breathe, and she's choking out, screaming, this is what he did to me. This is what he did to me. And I was like, oh my goodness. But in that moment, God gave me a vivid picture of what it's like to be on the receiving end of somebody's anger. I know, Barry, there are some words that get thrown around, power, control, etc.
Oh, yeah.
As we try to unpack this.
That's right.
Help us understand it. What's going on? I'm thinking of anger. I think of bullying. I think of people who may be crazy or insanely jealous or what have you, and they just lose their mind. Tell us about, though, what's really in the heart and mind of an abuser, and then I want to talk about what's it like to be on the receiving end of that.
I want to add to what you just said. Every 9 seconds. 9 seconds, count 1 to 10. Every 9 seconds, a woman is assaulted or beaten in America. Every year, 1 in 3 women who are victims of homicide are murdered by their current or former partner. This is dangerous, and we need to be aware of these numbers and these assault numbers. Well, you want to talk about power and control for a moment? What do you think power and control are? A lot of people use them interchangeably. I want to start with power. Power is a leadership concept. In my home, I'm the servant leader. But what does that imply? I'm concerned about my wife, my family. I'm my dog's butler. I mean, I'm there to serve them. When I go into a family and I'm doing just regular counseling, one of the things I want to know is who's the power broker. When I look and see who the servant of the family is, there's your power broker. And so a person who receives the power in the family is the one who is concerned about, loving about, and serving that family. Power is the ability to get someone else to accept your definition of reality as their own. Power cannot be taken. It can only be given. Let me say it again for your listeners. Power is the ability to get someone else to accept your definition of reality as their own. My faculty, my staff, my clients, my students, my family, give me power to define their reality to the degree that they can trust me and no further, nor should they, because I earn that. So it's a leadership foundation. All right. Control is the opposite end of the spectrum. Control means getting somebody else to do something using force or fear, no matter how slight. Say it again. Using force or fear, no matter how slight. In a family, there is an expectation of trust and safety. And when one or other members of that family violate that in a severe form, such as abuse, sexual assault, there's all kinds of descriptions of abuse. But when somebody violates it to that degree, they have violated a trust fiduciary relationship. And that is a major crime against a person, and the court sees it that way. So when the officers go into a home and the home is all tore up and there's things broken, or the woman or the man is showing signs of abuse, they've been hit, they've been strangled, like the lady you're talking about, I'm telling you, that goes on. I agree. I've not seen it in action, but I've seen the aftermath because I get what comes out for them. We work with both batterers and we work with victims. The most difficult person that I deal with, whether it be the batterer, is when they see themselves as victims, when they do not realize the part they play in the cycle of abuse, when they do not realize that when you're looking at a family systems approach, that sometimes the underdog is in control. And this can happen too. But when you go into this situation, when the police walk in, they find everything tore up. They're looking at several things. They want physical evidence, and they want a person to say this happened. You see, the crime, and as far as the police and the law enforcement is concerned, it's not a crime against the person. It's a crime against the state. So the person doesn't have to sign papers in any state in the union. The police have to go in. The law reads they must arrest when there's physical evidence of domestic violence in the home. So they want physical evidence. And then the woman says, yeah, well, look what he did to me, like the lady that you talked to. So if she's got marks on her throat, that's physical evidence. It supports her eyewitness testimony. He's gone. They must arrest. And now it's up to the court system to adjudicate that. And there are ways in which we can rehabilitate. In California, they have to spend a year with my staff, each abuser that we take in. And we have to answer to the court and probation. We have signed releases where we answer to them. Are they fulfilling to the letter of the law their probation requirements? So we deal under that umbrella. Now, these women, do they initiate some of this violence? I'm sorry to say that law enforcement tells me, these are law enforcement officers that I've both ridden with, that I know personally, and to a person, they tell me it is their experience that women can initiate up to 50% of all domestic violence.
Now, wait a second. She's in a situation where she's being abused or violated against, but you're saying she can trigger this? Everybody would say, come on, wait a second,
yeah,
hold,
I know, I
stop the conversation just for a moment. She doesn't precipitate violence here in this situation. Is she caught up in the cycle? Is this the intensity of the moment? Maybe she's protecting herself. I don't know.
It could be all of the above. Every case is different. But what I'm about to tell you is that in some cases, you've heard of the cycle of violence.
There's such a pattern of chaos.
Mm-hmm, that she sees where it is in the cycle. It's building up stress. He's just about ready to explode. So she might initiate it just to get him going. She might trigger him just to get it over with. So he'll go back to the honeymoon. Oh, honey, I'm sorry. I'll never do it again. Please stay with me. Don't leave me. And then that stress begins to build up. So there are those issues. There are other issues.
But how he responds is he has to own responsibility for that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And we hold them accountable. Yes, absolutely. You see, we do not hug a thug. Now, there are people who do it, and I can't answer for them. I don't train them that way. When I train therapists in California to do domestic violence batterers programming, our main purpose is to protect the victim. If we err on the side of protecting the victim, so be it. But that is our main course, and that's in law. That is in state law, 1203.097, 1203.098 of the Welfare and Institution Codes. And it teaches us how we're to train people and how we're to supervise them in this field. So we do not let the guy off the hook. He has to take accountability. But it may be that she initiated. We have to help him understand, well, what part do you play in that? Okay, what part do you let your anger get out of control? What part are you in that cycle of abuse? Now, we have it in about 5% of cases where the women are arrested for abusing their husband, leaving marks, going after them with a ball bat. There's a lot of cases where the woman is never touched, and that's in property destruction, and we see that a lot too, where the guy will be angry at her, he'll break her things. This is still abuse. He will punch holes in the walls, he'll destroy the TV.
Mess with her pet, harass her about the kids.
Yeah, all of this.
A picture I have in my mind is this woman, she was talking to me about it, and she just like started screaming. Because she felt like she was in the moment where she felt completely helpless, out of control, and didn't know what to do. So she just started screaming.
Did you hear her reliving that?
She took me there.
She took you there.
Oh, yeah.
And she knew that she was safe enough to take you there.
Yeah.
And this is another strong
what
male.
What a horrific moment, because you can imagine behind closed doors what goes on, the intimidation and the insanity of what we can do to each other.
But see, there's a betrayal there. He has betrayed. She goes into the relationship with an expectation of trust and safety. And when he hurts her, he has betrayed that relationship. And that is serious. If I'm working in your store and you hire me to run the cash register, we have a fiduciary relationship, a relationship of trust. Now, if I reach into the cash register and I take a dollar and put it in my pocket and I leave, what crime have I committed? Now, I'm talking about the state of California now. What crime have I committed? Petty theft? No, embezzlement. When there is a fiduciary relationship of trust and you violate that, it went from a misdemeanor petty theft to a felony embezzlement. By the way, that same clerk goes in the back and steals soap suds out of the stockroom. That wasn't entrusted with her. That's petty theft. But when there's the expectation of trust, whether in a business relationship or a home environment, this expectation of trust and safety, that's a betrayal of that expectation and that agreement that when I am with you and I'm close to you and I'm in your inner circle, that you're going to protect me. And the good husband does protect. You know, the sad thing is that 5% of men in our nation abuse. But you know what the good news is? 95% don't. And we have to keep that in mind. A lot of men don't abuse. And a lot of times men are abandoned in their childhood. They've seen abuse in their families. And so they're going to recreate that because it's all they know. We have to be able to help people besides just throwing them in prison. Well, the neat thing I get to do is I get to go in the jails. I get to go and work with guys on probation and parole, and I get to help them address those kinds of issues, those both mental health issues, although I don't therapize them, but I do what's called psychoeducational. I give them alternatives, have them learn things and how they could behave better. What are the outcomes? How are we thinking? Why are we thinking that way? And what are the outcomes of not being in control of our feelings?
Barry, I'm still in my mind staying with this being on the receiving end of someone's anger. In that, I'm thinking about her being maybe sexually coerced, him taunting or messing with her over the kids to a point of where it makes her like lose her mind. What is it doing to her soul? To her heart, Barry? I think it would be easy to talk about feelings of helplessness and anxiety and a sense
betrayal.
Of worthlessness.
Betrayal.
There's a good word.
Betrayal is a good word. And you know something? Nobody deserves to be betrayed, especially in a love relationship. That totally distorts everything that God intends for marriage.
I think it just mars the soul. It's not the way it's supposed to be.
No.
And who's going to be the advocate in all this? You know that? Who helps her?
I agree with you totally. I don't make excuses and I don't hug thugs. I just want to make that clear to your listening audience. I really do care about the victims and I care deeply about them. I have sat in counseling sessions with abuse cases where I've worked with victims and heard their sad stories and the horror and the post-traumatic stress, the reliving of those horrible things. We have to let them tell their stories. We have to hear the narratives without fixing, without educating them, but simply stay engaged. If you're a counselor listening to this, I cannot fix her pain. I can't say the pain is okay or it's going to go away. But what I can do is I can be present with her. I can get her to tell her story. I can encourage that. She can feel believed. Then she can go about the business of healing and not go about the business of trying to convince somebody how betrayed she was. She needs to be heard.
Barry, the pattern of abuse you had mentioned earlier. I was just scribbling down in my notes here. A trigger incident happens. Things escalate between the two of them. The abuse occurs, this violent act or whatever. There's obviously remorse. I'm sorry, baby. I promise you I'll never do it again. And then maybe things are okay for a little while, and then a trigger happens, and it goes on and again. People often, in the midst of this, wonder what's wrong with her. Why doesn't she pack up and get her tail out of there?
Oh, there's a ton of reasons. Being in San Diego, I work a lot with military, law enforcement. I have policemen that are in my batterers groups. I've had a judge in my batterers group. I've had a number of military in my batterers group, officers, enlisted men, and they're all facing the same thing. How do I control my rage, my anger, when it's building up inside of me and I'm so stressed I can't stand straight? And she comes along and the kids are screaming. I want her to make a home for me where I can come home and recoup and be safe myself, and that's not occurring. And I don't know any other way of getting her to do what I want her to do except get forceful and maybe make a threat. Yes, it occurs. And it occurs to good people. And we don't want it to happen to good people, but the law is very strict. These people will go to jail. And here's the sad thing. In the military or law enforcement, they lose their weapons. And that's how they make their livelihood. Question, if my husband is a police officer, are the other police officers going to believe me? Number two, will we lose our livelihood if I report? Military, will my husband, who brings home the bacon, and I live in Navy housing, if he goes to jail, is that going to end his career? Is he up for promotion that I've just squandered that promotion for my husband? And they do love their mates oftentimes. But if it's a reoccurring theme and they need to get out of the relationship, there are programs all over the United States. If you're battered, you might have to go to 32 different agencies before you get all the help you need. You could be talking law enforcement, district attorney, there's two agencies right there, social workers, protection, how do I take care of my kids?
I want to talk about all those in just a moment, because you're right. This is serious. There's so much to do here.
To unpack.
It's critical. But let me go back to why she stayed. I just scribbled down listening to you. Loved. She just wants to be loved. Maybe money. What am I going to do? I don't have any money. I don't have any place to go.
Right.
How about fear? I'm terrified. Afraid he's going to kill me. Or do something. I'm serious. If he's willing to choke me and he threatens me, he'll do that to me.
He could track me down.
Stalking you everywhere. It's stalking you online, on your phone, on everything. It's ripping doors off the wall.
And that's terrifying.
The kids could be a reason. It could be broken relationship stuff. She just is broken.
Does my husband have a right to his children? Am I going to take those kids away from him?
And so as a result, if you're in a position to help, you've got to understand these driving forces that are keeping her locked into a potentially threatening situation. Not only just her and her kids. And it's complicated.
It's extremely complicated. When I train therapists to work with batterers and I train therapists to work with victims, this is a 50 or 48 hour coursework. I certify them, they've taken the coursework, and then they've got to go for a year, 1,000 hours under supervision under another person's license in order to receive cases from the courts. And the law is specific. For example, a domestic violence counselor cannot see both the victim and the abuser in the same session. It's against the law because we have a tendency to take sides. And it used to be that in the 70s, the man was sent packing. You know, just go somewhere else and you guys learn to get along. I don't want to come back here. But since things like O.J. Simpson, the women's movement has really sparked I don't want to call it a revival, but certainly the importance of being able to help victims and to address the needs of the batterers and the victims.
Well, we certainly hate to interrupt this somber broadcast of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, but unfortunately, we've run out of time for today. I'm Roger Marsh, and you've been listening to Dr. Tim Clinton's conversation with veteran therapist Dr. Barry Lord. Now, if you find yourself in an abusive relationship, please seek help. Do not wait. Call the National Domestic Violence Hotline right now at 800-799-7233. That's 1-800-799-7233. Of course, domestic abuse is unbelievably brutal, and it's very painful for any family to go through. And we also pray that the Lord would convict those who are guilty of this sin and bring about reconciliation and healing in their lives. Be sure to join us again tomorrow for the conclusion of Dr. Tim Clinton's conversation with Dr. Barry Lord. They'll describe the secret shame that accompanies domestic violence victims. Dr. Lord will also stress the church's role in providing support for those hurting families. Join us for the rest of that conversation right here next time on Family Talk.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
This is James Dobson again. As we close today's program, I just want to thank so many of you out there who make this broadcast possible with your contributions. And I want to tell you how much your generosity is appreciated.